A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
An Erio's original.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest disasters and tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today we'll be discussing the Stonewall Riots. And here's what you need to know. The Stonewall Inn, located at 51 and 53 Christopher Street in the Greenwich Village neighborhood of New York City, was a popular gay bar and focal point of an uprising that lasted several days in the summer of 1969. In the 1950s and 1960s, LGBTQ Americans were up against a growing anti-gay legal system. While being gay was legal in the state of New York, bars that openly served alcohol to gay customers were considered by the State Liquor Authority, SLA, to be, quote, disorderly houses where unlawful practices are habitually carried on by the public. For this reason, the SLA refused to issue liquor licenses to gay bars in the city, and many places had their licenses suspended or revoked for, quote, indecent conduct. The owners and managers of these bars were rarely gay, and the Stonewall Inn, like many other gay bars in the village, was owned by the mafia. At 1:20 a.m. in the early morning hours of June 28, 1969, Deputy Inspector Seymour Pine of Manhattan's 1st Division of Public Morals, along with several undercover officers, entered the Stonewall Inn and announced it was a raid.
Police! We're taking the place!
The doors were sealed and the lights went on. This took many inside by surprise as they hadn't been tipped off this time. Armed with a warrant, police checked IDs. Those who were employees of the bar or were found to be violating the state's gender-appropriate clothing statute were held in a coat closet while they waited to be arrested. The rest were released one by one. But outside, they didn't immediately disperse. Within minutes, about 150 people had congregated across the street at Sheridan Square. Many, who were waiting for their friends still inside, cheered for people as they exited. Initially, some described it as an almost festive gathering. But the atmosphere quickly changed when a woman in handcuffs, who witnesses identified as a locally known, quote, butch lesbian named Stormé de Larverie, was escorted outside and fought with police for about 10 minutes. One witness claimed Stormé had been hit on the head by an officer with a baton for complaining that her handcuffs were too tight. Bystanders recalled the spark that ignited the crowd when she shouted,
"Why don't you guys do something?"
It is believed it was that moment when things turned explosive. Someone declared that the bar had been raided because the police hadn't been paid off, prompting the crowd to throw pennies toward the cops and shouting,
"Let's pay them off!"
and
"Pigs!"
Pennies turned into quarters, turned into bottles, turned into cobblestones. A parking meter was used to battery ram the door from the bar. A trash can on the street was set on fire, as was the coke closet inside Stonewall. Molotov cocktails were thrown, and parts of the building caught fire. As things escalated, Deputy Pine and his officers were outnumbered by the swelling crowd of 600 people. The NYPD Tactical Patrol Force, TPF, was called upon. In military formation, they attempted to control the crowd. The crowd responded with an impromptu chorus line facing the cops. At that point, the police started chasing after the people and hitting them with their batons. The crowd finally dispersed. By 4 a.m., the streets surrounding the Stonewall Inn had been cleared. 13 people were arrested that night, and some of those in the crowd were hospitalized. 4 police officers were also injured. Almost everything inside the bar had been destroyed. But the next day, the protests continued. Thousands of people participated in the city's uprising for a total of 6 days. New groups like the Gay Liberation Front, GLF, and the Gay Activists Alliance, GAA, were launched as a direct result. While early gay rights organizations of the 50s and early 60s, like the Mattachine Society, had a more conservative approach to the fight for gay rights, Stonewall is credited with having started the second wave of the movement, focusing on radical direct action and countering societal shame with gay pride. It was the new political ideology known as gay liberation. Fun facts, aka death stats. About 205 people were believed to be inside the Stonewall Inn during the raid. 13 of them were arrested. 28 cases of beer and 19 bottles of hard liquor were seized. There is almost no photographic coverage of the riots, largely because the press didn't cover gay issues. On the one-year anniversary of the riots, on June 28, 1970, thousands of people marched in the streets of Manhattan from the Stonewall Inn to Central Park in what was then called Christopher Street Liberation Day, America's first gay pride parade. The parade's official chant was, "Say it loud, gay is proud."
Why are you here today?
Darling, I want my gay rights now. I think it's about time the gay brothers and sisters got their rights, and especially the women.
With us today, we have producer Amanda Lund.
Hi, Rebecca.
Fact checking for us today is Clayton Early.
I'm here. I'm queer, and I know how to Google.
And our very special guest is Margaret Cho. Margaret, hi.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We are so excited to have you on because you're such a huge advocate of the LGBTQ community.
Thank you.
And you also have a podcast on the Erios Network called The Margaret Cho. And everyone
yes.
should check it out because they're doing bonus episodes for Pride Month.
That's right, to celebrate gay pride. And so this is a special month, and it's a special subject for me as I love gay pride.
I want to say, like, probably 50% of the guests you have on The Margaret Cho are drag queens.
Yeah, we have quite a large drag contingent, which is always really special. And I love it because everybody also comes on without their makeup on. So we're very lucky to have the casual nature of... I love like when you can have drag without the drag.
Yes, a fresh face.
It's so, it feels good.
The day right now when we're recording, it's the 5th anniversary of the Marriage Equality Act.
Hey.
So, big day.
Yes.
That's awesome. Yes.
Big really day for big day. Clay.
He, big day for me.
That was, you decided to propose to your...
Yeah, shortly after. It empowered me to propose to my then boyfriend at the time and now husband.
That's incredible. Wow.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
All right. Are we ready to talk about terrible American history?
Yay!
Yay! Just a quick, very abridged recap of LGBTQ American history that you probably weren't taught in school. So 1600s, sodomy laws that defined certain sexual acts as crime are put in place in the colonies. And these laws are mainly targeted towards sexual acts between persons of the same sex. In 1777, Thomas Jefferson revises Virginia law to make sodomy punishable by mutilation rather than death. So he made it a little better. terrible. 1917, U.S. immigration laws modified to ban persons with abnormal sexual, this is quote, abnormal sexual instincts from entering the United States. 1942, working with psychiatrists, the military develops guidelines for recruiters in order to identify and exclude gay men from the services. Okay, it gets even worse. 1947, the State Department begins firing suspected homosexuals under President Truman's National Security Loyalty Program. In 1950, New York made legal history when it became the first state in the U.S. to reduce sodomy to a misdemeanor with a maximum penalty of 6 months in prison. In 1950, the Mattachine Society, a gay organization aimed at promoting tolerance of homosexuality, is founded in L.A. by Harry Hay. 1952, American Psychiatric Association, APA, declares, quote, homosexuality a mental disorder. 1953, President Dwight D. Eisenhower issues an executive order banning the employment of, quote, homosexuals by the federal government. Many state and local governments soon adopt similar policies, and by 1955, more than 1,200 men and women are fired from their federal government jobs. Now, 1962, Illinois becomes the first state to eliminate sodomy laws, and they are actually the only state at the time of the Stonewall Uprising that has done that. Some states follow through, but by 2003, 14 states still have sodomy laws. That's when the Supreme Court reverses the decision and invalidates sodomy laws in all 50 states. So it's not until 2003. Now, I think that we should start off by kind of talking about some of the commemorated participants of the uprising. There's Stormé DeLarvery, and she's actually the woman who is quoted with sparking the crowd and igniting people to fight with the police. She apparently shouted to bystanders, why don't you guys do something? And her role in the movement lasted long after the 1969. For decades, she was a self-appointed guardian of lesbians in the village. She was a tall, androgynous, and armed, and she held a state gun permit, so she would go around bars, patrolling the sidewalks and checking in on her lesbian bars, and she called them her baby girls. And then there's Sylvia Rivera and Marsha P. Johnson, who were subculturally famous New York City drag queens of color. Johnson participated at Stonewall. Rivera claimed to be a participant, but historians dispute it. This is one of the things where, like, everyone in the community was like, I was there. They all wanted to be there.
Yeah, there's lots of contention about whether Marcia threw the first brick, and you know, it's like everything I found, nothing really confirms, but there's a lot of like they were around and participating in some capacity.
If you Google Stonewall, these are the two images. You know, you see Marcia and Sylvia. They're kind of like iconic. Sylvia is half Puerto Rican, so woot-woot. And there's also Miss Major Griffin Gracie. She was there at waiting for one of her girlfriends at the bar, and she's the one who is said to have struck the police with her purse. Let's start with putting people up on the board. First, off the bat, I think we need to talk about the police.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the police are the ones that are doing the raiding, so they're being paid off by the mob. So they're deciding what is okay to enforce. It's selective enforcement, I guess you could call it.
What a weird like bedfellow the queer community in like cahoots with the mafia, who are like, well, we could make a buck, so like, sure, we'll take care of you guys.
Well, the story about the mafia involvement with the gay bar was that one of the mafia wives who had she had been married to, I guess, somebody in the mafia, was actually a lesbian. And so she had, I guess, divorced somebody in the mafia and then taken up with her lover and bought one of the bars and then was running it. And was basically running it for the mafia in order to have a place to hang out. And so that was one of the reasons why I think that was the Stonewall Inn was one of the places that she was running. And I think that was the thing of like that they were also working with the police. And then I think there's something that was supposedly the story about why it got raided. There was some kind of an argument that happened with the police there and why they ended up raiding it. But it's something that is just a strange thing. You would think like, because, you know, you think that the mafia is sort of a very, very heteronormative organization that wouldn't necessarily be involved with gay anything. So it's an odd thing that they would be associated. But I think mm-hmm. that was I also think that they do. They don't really also care if there's money involved. They're going to make money where they can make money.
We obviously we should put the mafia up on the board as well. In terms of the police, though, there are two people that are particularly egregious. There's the police commissioner, Howard Leary, and he's the one who approves the raids and approves the arrests against the gay community that was happening at the time. And there's also Deputy Seymour Pine, who was actually there. He's the guy who goes in and does the raid with the other undercover cops. And he had been there on the Tuesday before. So he was known to everyone, to all the patrons and the bar, because he did it himself. And he's later, he's an interesting person because, and we can talk about this later, because it could, you know, he was particularly egregious, but he was also like a cog in the wheel. So we'll discuss, I guess. But he does later on come on to say, I mean, 2004, he retires in 76. And in 2004, he acknowledges that officers certainly were prejudiced, but he had no idea what gay people were about. This is what he says. He then also justifies the raid on the Stonewall as a routine way of combating organized crime and noted that arresting gay people was an easy way for officers to improve their arrest numbers.
Well, nothing now, wrong with that. I can't see that leading to a problem, having quotas to fill on how many people you arrest.
Oh, God.
Yeah, good sense. Thing that stopped, right?
Yeah.
So the mafia, there's this mobster named Fat Tony, and he's with the Genovese crime family. He's the guy, he's the one who in the New York Times and all these things is quoted as owning, he bought the place Fat Tony, and which had been a restaurant that was damaged in a fire, and he converts it to this gay bar by slapping some black paint on the walls and of course the windows, because all of the windows were closed up. And he just posted a picture of a man at the front door. And that was it. That was his his renovation.
Yeah.
So he, of course, controls everything inside, like from the jukebox to cigarettes. And he's the one who's bribing the police, the New York 6 police precinct, with around $1,200 a month to turn a blind eye as to what's going on. Now, there's what starts happening, though, which is what I think is really interesting. Stonewall's owners also reportedly engaged in extortion. Employees singled out wealthy patrons who were not public about their sexuality and blackmailed them for large sums of money with the threat of being outed. This practice eventually became the most profitable aspect of the mafia's club management, and the person who enforced that was a guy by the name of Ed Murphy, who is quoted as, his nickname was The Skull, and he was in charge of the extortion.
Should we put the Stonewall Inn owners of the time the board?
I think let's put Fat Tony and The Skull. And of course, along with the police, we have to put the New York State Liquor Authority, who... they're in the raid comes amid a broader police crackdown on gay bars for operating a New York State Liquor Authority license, which was something they did only because the SLA refused to grant bars that served gay licenses, forcing them to operate as illegal saloons.
It's for that reason that the Stonewall Inn was considered what's called a bottle club, and you had to sign this fake kind of like registry as you walked in the door, which I'm sure people mostly use fake names.
They wouldn't have used their real name because it was such a big fear at the time that they would be outed. I mean, something I was reading was that if you got caught in a raid, then they would put your name and your face in the newspapers.
I mean, yeah, it was just like, it'd be just so great to be in the gay paper. With your face. So would it be like your school picture, or like your just a photo, like a mugshot? Or
right.
I mean, it's like, could you choose the photo that they put, or you would just? I mean, it's just kind of a. I mean, I wonder what photo you would have to put. I mean, it's kind of amazing. An artist rendering.
What about to be outed? Yeah, right.
It's like your mugshot. Act a little
gayer, probably the mugshot,
so that they know.
Yeah, yeah.
They would also put people's addresses.
So maybe if you had a common name, there would be no mistake.
Yeah,
it's this Mr. Smith, Mr. John Smith.
All of this is all happening because of this 1964 World's Fair that is supposed to go to New York City.
Oh, go on.
All of these laws are put in place. And there's this mayor. So there's this mayor, Robert Wagner, and he decides that he is going to rid the streets of transgender, gay, LGBTQ, everything. He wants to clean New York City, clean up New York City for the World's Fair.
Okay, so we got to put the World's Fair on the board.
Yeah. This is probably a really dumb question, Clayton, and maybe you can help us with this.
Okay.
What is the point of the World's Fair?
To show off a city? God, I mean, technology and advancement.
Inventions, and mm-hmm. like it's kind of like so, inventors can show things, innovations.
The birth of like... certain types of architecture and even like landscaping, I think, was a big part. What's the guy's name who did like the big landscaping for the World Fair in Chicago? They wrote about him in that book, The Devil in the White City. I can't remember his name, but he also designed Central Park. Like it was a lot of just like look how futuristic and innovative we are, and come and be impressed by our place in the world, other countries, like the Olympics.
Right, and I was just going to say, it probably does all go back to money, because if the New York City has the World's Fair, it's going to bring in a ton of tourism and boost the economy there.
You know, so, we have to put capitalism on the board, right? I'm on the show with this, so capitalism is always up there.
Let's put capitalism up. And that's also, I mean, we haven't even talked about, like, homophobia and, like, just general bigotry.
Mm. Yeah.
According to Estelle Friedmans from the social stigma associated with being queer, the laws that discriminated against sexual nonconformity to the risk of being institutionalized as a deviant. This forced major LGBTQ people into the closet, hiding their identities and their desires. Then The Atlantic says, in short, the Stonewall operates as a sort of de facto community center for gay youth rendering homeless by familial and institutional rejection who had taken refuge in New York City in hopes of finding a place where they could be in the world. This continues decades later.
I think something that's interesting to consider there, not that we're vilifying people in the LGBT community, but there's even stigma among other, you know, gay and lesbian men for drag queens at the time. And the Stonewall was considered a refuge for what they called the drags or the queens, who even other gay people in the community at the time were kind of like, you know, were shunning for whatever reason.
Yeah, there's like a need for like heteronormative behavior, even within the queer community. Like you still have to conform. That's why there's like really rigid body ideals. Like there's like really rigid kind of like beauty ideals, even within queerness. Like we have really like we still sort of have like this, these like ideals that we stick to, even if we're going to live outside heterosexuality, you know. And it's really unfortunate. And it's like if you can't be quote unquote normal, you still have to be normal. So it's a weird, it's these double standards that we hold ourselves to, even.
I think that's true of like also other marginalized or like minorities, even, mm-hmm. right? Where it's like you try and show them your best, quote unquote. Right. And that's what I found so inspiring about the gay liberation movement, which was like we are our best, you know. It's like showing, not having to prove anything, and just like you should accept us because you should accept us, period.
Yeah, they kind of flipped it on its head, because at the time it was all about proving that like it's inferior and, you know, it's a disease or mental illness. And they were like, no, it's beautiful. Like we are beautiful. Like queer is beautiful, and we're going to like reclaim it.
Yeah.
And celebrate it.
I mean, in a way, I wonder if we can put the Mattachine Society up there.
For being too militant about assimilation?
Well, it's twofold, right? Because I think the Mattachine Society was a response to what was happening at the time with all of these laws and this like hatred. But at the same time, it wasn't helping the movement. That kind of activism.
Yeah, my understanding is that they were the more conservative, whereas this finally broke from that and was like, no, we are going to be direct and aggressive and like defy all of that, instead of trying to like ask permission to like just exist alongside you.
They also like asked their members to like dress form like in suit, like they always required the men to protest in suits and the women to wear dresses.
What a reflection of the time.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, but it's kind of like in the early 2000s, a lot, I mean, before like the Gay Marriage Act, everything like was, you know, like early gay lobbyist groups wouldn't include trans language or like non-binary language in any of the bills, because they were like, let's get this passed first and then we'll include the trans community. And it was like, there was a lot of pushback with that, because like now you're putting conditions on what's gay. You know, and that wasn't the right way to go about it. So it's almost, it's like, you know, we either are all free or we're not, you know, and you can't put conditions on it. But it's like that same thing of like, let's let's sort of see how conservative we can go so that they'll accept us is not the right way. But still, you know, they're going to try to do that.
I saw this clip of this guy who was a representative of the Mattachine Society in Florida, like speaking to Florida Congress or whatever, saying, yes, like we want you to remove laws about our hiring. But don't worry, like we're not asking for you to accept us being married, and we're not asking for you to let us have children. No, 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 no. We would never do that. We just want you to let us work, which is like.
I mean, how much of that is like strategic versus just your own like their own internal homophobia?
Right.
You know, like
right.
It was hard for me to say that I was gay when I was a teenager. Like, finally coming out, the word gay had such a stigma that you like start to believe it. It's like Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah, but for the time, it's truly revolutionary. You know, because they were so. I mean, when you're brought up in that the darkness of the closet, you don't even know where freedom lies. So it's very hard to even. Judge, like, how would they even know, like, how to talk about freedom, you know? So it's like really it's hard because it's like those people grew up in that sort of shadow of, like, you know, like Anita Bryant and Phyllis Schlafly, like the intense craziness of the way that homosexuality was really looked at as this, I mean, how horrible and a nightmare of, like, the invisibility of homosexuality and the secrecy around it and the pain that people had to go through if they were gay, you know, like it was just like, you know, not only was it invisible, but if it was visible, it was like this incredible shame. So, I mean, it's very hard to think about like these early gay activists emerging saying it's not that bad.
Yeah.
Right. It's not that bad. It's fine.
Oh, God. Look at me. I'm in a suit.
I'm okay. I'm fine.
Oh. Well, and to your point, I think a big part of that was religion, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. It's the religious institutions that are providing this, like... how do you say, it's like they're the ones imposing the shame. They're calling it sin or whatever it is that they call it in their religion. And they're promoting this superiority, this like heterosexual superiority that then empowers these people to be like, yeah, I'm right. I should make those laws. I should stand by this because religion is telling me that that's okay.
Right.
And that hasn't changed, unfortunately.
No, not at all.
So should we put God up on the board?
Absolutely.
God.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely.
God or we could put God for sure. Is there also something like Christianity?
Yeah. Christianity, or religion, sure. Organized religion. Yes.
Organized religion, mm-hmm. because there are other religions that are not Christian who still promote that.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Totally.
Is there a religion that's like... homosexuality is cool, like it's totally fine.
Yeah,
there's churches.
Yeah, there's I mean, yeah, like I think Buddhism is cool. Buddhism in general is pretty cool with gayness. I think
if there's anything else people want to throw on the board, let's get it up there.
I have two things, one of them being communism, because, you know, there's this somehow this like gay hatred or these gay laws come at a time during the Red Scare. So according to Gay and Lesbian Review, a thriving gay subculture existed in New York by the early 20th century, and this subculture was sufficiently tolerated that it burst into the mainstream popular culture in the 1920s and 30s as the, quote, pansy craze. I'd never heard that term, pansy craze. Which in turn created a measure of gay visibility in films and plays. However, a backlash began during the Depression era and worsened during World War II, culminating in the culture of nightmare that was the 1950s. The Lavender Scare shows how the terror brought on by the Cold War fed a national hysteria about homosexuality. In the end, it was homosexuals even more than communists or their sympathizers who wore the brunt of the government purges. So the conflation of homosexuality and communism occurred in part because during the Red Scare, a hardening of the American psyche occurred with which engendered a corresponding desire for American males to be, quote, tougher.
I just watched a couple of documentaries on Roy Cohen, who is a fascinating character. So he was the attorney as a very young man. He was super involved in the McCarthy hearings. He was also famously closeted and was like going out all the time, and he died of AIDS. And he also is like Trump's mentor.
Oh.
But anyway, so there's a big thing at the time during the McCarthy era. One of the reasons why they were so homophobic is because they thought that foreign governments could use someone being closeted to kind of turn them and blackmail them. And that was like one of the excuses they used for criminalizing homosexuality.
So then maybe instead of communism, we put McCarthyism.
I could see that being connected.
So I wanted to say the fashion industry now, and this whole, every episode I try and put the fashion, not every episode, but most episodes I try and put the fashion industry in jail. But for this one, I think we actually have a case, Amanda.
Okay, so, I'll hear it.
The New York gender appropriate clothing laws.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
There were anti-cross-dressing laws dating back to 1845 that declared it a crime to have your, quote, face painted, discolored, covered, or concealed, or be otherwise disguised in a road or public highway. And technically, police just use these old, often unrelated laws to target LGBTQ people throughout the 1940s, 50s, and 60s.
For like a different reason?
What was it? They were called masquerade laws, and they were for
tax collectors, right? Isn't that what I read?
They were trying
to dress as Native Americans.
They would dress as Native Americans. Yes.
Terrible.
Yes, exactly. So wow. They just kind of like used it. They're like, oh, this fits.
This will do. This will
do.
Get in there. Raid that bar.
And there was also like the three piece clothing law, where you had to wear three articles of clothing that that related to your sex. So if you were a man, you had to wear, I don't know, a underwear, men's boxers, an under t-shirt.
Can you imagine the indecency of during a raid someone just questioning your gender identity and pulling you into a bathroom as they did during the Stonewall riots and being like, show us your genitalia and prove
it's so crazy.
Prove it.
Yeah.
No.
That's insane. It's humiliating.
So crazy.
And socks didn't count for the three-piece rule. Mm-hmm. The three.
Because they're too gender neutral, or
that's what I read. They didn't count.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So, who's to blame for the Stonewall riots? We have the police, police commissioner Howard Leary, Deputy Seymour Pine, the Mafia, Fat Tony and the Skull, the New York State Liquor Authority, New York World's Fair, Clayton's Capitalism, Homophobia, the Mattachine Society, God, Organized Religion, McCarthyism, the Lavender Scare, and the fashion industry.
Wow. A lot of good things up on this board.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, I feel like off the bat, we can take make Fat Tony and the Skull part of the Mafia.
Okay.
Are there any of these that we think that we can take off through process of elimination?
I would say you could take off the Mattachine Society because I don't think they really had any involvement in instigating the riots or the violence itself.
I also think that, again, they were doing their best, right?
Right.
For the time, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, they were doing the good work.
Yeah. And they were putting themselves out there, which was very brave.
Yeah,
whatever
yeah.
form, you know, whatever form they did. I mean, Deputy, again, see, this is where it's like Deputy Seymour Pine, was he just following orders? But he's the one conducting these raids.
Yeah, I think he's definitely to blame there. I mean, that's just definitely part of it.
I agree.
To me, like, the Mafia isn't the strongest because they were so motivated. They seem to me to be motivated by, like, money and less by hate. Mm-hmm. And also, it was interesting what Margaret was saying about there may have been something personal going on.
Yes, her name is Anna Genovese, was the wife, the name of the wife that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. And what I did read was that she was, a lot of people said she was into the ladies.
Yeah. yeah.
They could have instigated, I mean, they could have exacerbated the situation, the Mafia, but I don't think they were, doesn't seem like they were a direct cause.
No, I think they were just sort of bystanders. They just happened to sort of be
right.
there.
Yeah, they definitely weren't allies, but I think we can take them off. Now, the World's Fair.
I mean, no, only because when do you hear people talking about the World's Fair alongside the Stonewall riots, like, regularly, I guess? It seems like not the go-to.
You could almost lump that into, if you put it all in with the, actually those three are in the same thing, is the capitalism, the World's Fair, and the Liquor Authority. Like, they're all kind of the same idea.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It's all the same.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What would the umbrella for that be called? Would that just basically be capitalism?
Like, yeah, it would just be like the money that's coming in to New York, like the sort of whatever financial implications of, you know, any sort of thing of like the investment that people have in this or the image or New York's image financially.
Mm, mm-hmm. I like that.
I like that too.
So what kind of, I'm going to sort of take off capitalism, sorry, Clayton, and kind of just umbrella this by putting New York's image or New York's capitalist.
Greed.
Yeah, New York's greed.
Yeah.
Greedy image.
Yeah.
I mean, I would like to send at some point. I would like to send the World's Fair to jail, but I think if we ever do an episode about the World's Fair where there was that serial killer, like the book you were talking about, Clayton.
Yes, Devil in the White City.
Yeah, I think we could maybe have a case to send the fair to jail at that point. So,
oh, that's the one about H.H. Holmes.
Yes,
that's
H. Holmes.
That's a great book.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, if we do an episode like "Who's to Blame for H.H. Holmes," I think the fair actually, we could probably get the Pharaoh to jail.
We'll do that for you, Amanda.
Okay, thank you. I love a fair. I don't know, but there's a lot of problems.
Yes. I also think we can take God out because I think God, more than that, it's organized religion, right?
Yeah.
Right. It's people invoking God.
Well, I think people using God as an excuse. I think it's more, and religion as an excuse, too. That it has more to do with people's own fear of their own possible gayness and their own like desires and their own human frailties and their own weaknesses than it does of their own, you know, God or any sort of fear of religion or whatever.
Yeah, so I think you're right. I think we can take off organized religion for this. Like, that's just a crutch.
Yeah.
And McCarthyism, it really, like, inflamed the, and it was it was also a crutch, though. It was like an excuse for them to make these laws, but really underneath it, it's this own personal homophobia, right?
I feel like it sets the decade. What a decade. And it certainly builds the atmosphere for something like this to erupt. You know, it's fanning
the flames. But it was there all along.
So I'm going to take off McCarthyism. And then with that, the term the lavender scare. I've never heard that. I'm fascinated. But do we want to take both of those off?
Yes, I think we can take them off. I guess we can take the fashion industry off.
Yeah.
Oh, Rebecca, remember when we, what episode was it that we gave dress code to the big slap?
That was the Astor Place riots.
Right. I mean, we could, it kind of goes back to dress codes, but.
Yeah. Why is it that men wear pants and women wear skirts? Nobody knows. We just do it.
Because that's just what you do.
I mean,
there's no real reason.
The only thing I can say, I think about this all the time. And I'm like, is it for peeing purposes or is it a sexual thing?
No, I think it's because women have to have babies. And it's hard to have a baby if you're wearing pants.
Okay. So they always have to be ready to give birth.
But that's why I never wear pants. It's just in case. It's just in case.
just in case. Yeah.
Because you never know.
I always wear pants because I don't want to have a baby. So I don't want to put myself in that position.
Okay, so just to recap for the listeners, we now are down to the police. Police Commissioner Howard Leary, Deputy Seymour Pine, New York's greedy image, and homophobia.
I think we can take Leary off because I think Seymour, Deputy Pine, was more, he had a vendetta, it feels like, against the Stonewall. It's hard to not put homophobia in jail.
And I think that it is all homophobia. I mean, it is like the police are just acting under the orders of the deputy, but it is basically homophobia.
I agree.
That's a good point. Yeah, if the homophobia didn't exist, the police wouldn't be raiding the bars trying to break up people for
homophobia didn't exist, then they wouldn't mind gay people being out on the street.
And they could get money other ways, and it's not the gay people that are making the money go away. It isn't the money. Gay people don't make any city look poorer by any extent.
No, in fact, they actually make it better.
Well, yeah. You're always happy when the gays move into.
Literally
the
been proven. Yeah. Okay, then I'm
like
with
that.
You. I think we should send homophobia to jail and then give the big slap to the police.
I'm down with that.
The police, you're getting the big slap. Homophobia, you're going to the alarmist jail.
Yay!
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 Wow! I can't wait to live in a world without homophobia. Thank you so much for joining us, Margaret.
Thank you. This is a lot of fun.
After Stonewall. According to History.com, though the Stonewall Uprising didn't start the gay rights movement, it was a galvanizing force for LGBTQ+ political activism, leading to numerous gay rights organizations, including the Gay Liberation Front, Human Rights Campaign, GLAAD, and PFLAG. Craig Rodwell is credited with having the idea to memorialize the riots with an annual celebration. In June of 1970, the first marches were held to celebrate Stonewall in New York, San Francisco, Chicago, and Los Angeles. Since then, his idea of holding an annual march has spread to other cities around the U.S. and around the world. Since 2016, Stonewall Inn, Christopher Park, and the surrounding streets and sidewalks are designated as a national monument in recognition of the area's contribution to gay rights. But there's still a long way to go. As of June 2019, 69 countries have laws criminalizing homosexuality. Among these 69 countries, 44 of them criminalize same-sex relationships. In 11 of them, they are punishable with the death penalty. Vote for who you think is to blame by going to thealarmistpodcast.com. Follow us at thealarmistthe on Twitter, at thealarmistpodcast on Instagram, or email us at thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Tune in next week. We'll be discussing the Manson murders.
Powered by Acast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.